One of the important issues as we grow up is our sexuality. As we grow up, our bodies mature and questions of sexuality begin to arise. And thoughts about what love might turn out to be like for us in the future also start to emerge in our heads. Now, these days, the area of sexuality and what constitutes appropriate sexual behaviour is basically a minefield, with, sadly, the vast majority of people blowing themselves up and harming others in the process. In order to deal with the important issue of sexuality and sexual behaviour, the first place we need to start is to recognise that all of us are creatures of a God who made us. And the God who made us designed our bodies and our sexuality in the way that he did for a reason. Furthermore, we need to understand that this God hasn't left the human race to try and to work out for itself what constitutes right and wrong behaviour in this area. This God who created us has given us clear instructions to help us understand how we should be operating when it comes to the sexual side of who we are. And when you think about it, if you've ever read the Bible from cover to cover, you'll actually see that the Bible has a fair bit to say about sex. And that's nothing to be awkward about, but it's a gift from God that we should celebrate. That being said, it's natural to have questions about human sexuality and how this fits in with being a Christian. The Corinthian Christians certainly had questions. From verse 1, we can see that the church in Corinth had written a letter to Paul asking about certain issues, one of which was the issue of celibacy and marriage. And on the assumption that most, if not all of us, also have particular questions when it comes to our own sexuality and how we should deal with this aspect of our lives, and also when we have questions about what this may mean for us in terms of a relationship with a partner, whether now or in the future, well, we can turn to Paul's advice on the topic of marriage and celibacy to the Corinthians. It's worthwhile us considering what he has to say. And as we do so, we can definitely learn more about how God would have us deal with our own sexuality. Paul starts off in response to the Corinthians' questions by speaking about the issue of celibacy. Now, celibacy isn't a word that we hear used much these days. When it does appear in the media, it's usually something that's ridiculed or something that's viewed as if it's some kind of weird problem that religious crackpots and the socially inept get caught up in. But that's not how the Apostle Paul thought about celibacy. He says in verse 1 that celibacy is actually good. It is good for a man not to touch a woman, he says. The word touch there is a euphemism for sexual relations. Abstaining from sexual relations with the opposite sex in order to live as a celibate person is good if God has given you that gift. There's nothing wrong with celibacy. In fact, all of us start out that way. Children, being immature, are celibate. But a problem arises once we start to mature. As a result of our physical development, celibacy sometimes isn't a realistic option, and that's probably the case for the majority of us adults. Paul understood this too, and in verse 2 he touches upon the problem of sexual immorality. Now, sexual immorality results from a misuse of the sexual drive that most of us have as part of God's design for our bodies as adults. Just as all of us have a desire to eat and drink and sleep, Most of us, once we've reached the age of maturity, also have a naturally inbuilt desire for sexual contact. And there's nothing wrong with this sexual desire in and of itself. It's been created in us by God. But problems arise when this desire, which is good in and of itself, is satisfied in the wrong way. Satisfying our sexual desires in the wrong way is what the Bible calls fornication or sexual immorality. And the biblical position is quite simple when you think about it. God has created us as male and female in order for a male and female to pair up as partners for life, as part of which sexual activity will take place, with children coming along normally also as a result of that union. This pairing of a man and a woman in a relationship of companionship involving sexual union is what the Bible calls marriage. And marriage, consummated by the first act of sex between the husband and wife, creates a one flesh relationship. That's how the Bible puts it. And according to the Bible, any sexual relations that transgress the boundaries of a legitimate one flesh relationship that's already been formed constitutes sexual immorality. Now, I don't know what you've seen or heard or practiced when it comes to sexual activity. But ever increasingly these days in society, it seems like anything goes. Today's lack of morality when it comes to sex is a far cry from God's ideal when He created us. And one of the things that you young ones in particular will have to sort out for yourselves is how to honour God with your sexuality in a sexually depraved world. The world around us doesn't care about God. And society's lack of morality when it comes to sex shows that. Most people out there think that we're just animals. And so in effect, they behave like animals. In verse 2, Paul tells us that because sexual immorality is always a potential problem, each man should have his own wife and each woman her own husband. Paul's view is that marriage is good. For those of us who have a sexual drive, then we need to start thinking about how we're meant to be using the sexual side of ourselves for God, by one day getting married and expressing our sexuality in a marriage in a way that fits in with God's design and in a way that pleases the God who created you. Don't buy the line out there in society which says that marriage isn't good. As far as God is concerned, and He's the one who's made us, marriage is good. As an institution designed and established by God, marriage is good. But there can also be problems, can't there? Why is it that married people sometimes don't feel that way? And in particular, why do married Christians sometimes not experience the goodness of marriage? In verses 3 to 5, Paul gives us some important principles for how marriages are supposed to work. And it's interesting how prominent sex is in what Paul has to say. He starts off in verse 3 by saying that if you're married, then the husband must give what is due to his wife. He's to perform his obligation to do his duty to his wife, and likewise the wife to her husband. But what are these obligations that are meant to be paid to each other in marriage? Well, it seems like Paul primarily has in mind what we would traditionally call conjugal rights. The rights of a married person to engage in sexual activity with his or her spouse. Now, I don't know, for those of you here who are married, to what extent you would say that you feel fulfilled sexually in your marriage. But if there's one or two people in your marriage who are unfulfilled sexually, then it's probably not a happy marriage. It shouldn't be that way. Part of being married is making sure that your husband or wife is happy. One of the problems that can commonly exist in unhappy marriages is that the two are still two, instead of becoming one flesh. In reflecting on how God created Eve and how God brought Eve to Adam to become his wife, the Bible says, "For this reason, a man will leave his father and mother and join to his wife, and they will become one flesh." If you're a husband and wife, you're supposed to be one flesh. No longer two, but one. This oneness will have both a spiritual and a physical dimension. But notice how Paul focuses on the physical aspect here in this passage. In God's design, physical unity between husband and wife plays a large role in the development of spiritual unity between husband and wife. The question that arises out of verse 3 for those of us who are married is, have I been fulfilling my obligation as a married person to satisfy my husband or wife sexually? If we love our partner, we'll actually be concerned about this issue, and we'll be concerned to understand our spouse better in order to fulfill them sexually. And keep in mind at this point that sex within marriage is meant to be an act of love, not an act of self-gratification. You might have a sexual need that you would like to be fulfilled, but the way of fulfilling it is actually by forgetting about yourself and fulfilling the sexual and emotional needs of your partner instead. And for those who may happen to be lazy when it comes to sex, leaving your marriage partner unfulfilled, well, note what Paul says in verse 4. The wife doesn't have authority over her own body, but the husband. Likewise, the husband also doesn't have authority over his own body, but the wife. In marriage, you're supposed to be one flesh. No longer two, but one. I suspect, however, for many of us who are married, it's not really like that, is it? It's not really one flesh, but it's still two separate individuals. Sorry, honey, I have a headache. Sorry, I need it now, and I don't care how you feel. Don't touch me. Why don't you love me? It's also me versus you. If you're married, your goal needs to be spiritual unity with your spouse. An important part of spiritual unity is physical unity, as much as is necessary to leave both sides fulfilled. Now, Paul says in verse 5, don't deprive each other of sexual contact, except perhaps by agreement for a limited time. Sometimes, for the sake of the Lord, whether it be for prayer or for some other service of God, whatever that may be, a husband and wife may temporarily agree to stop having regular sexual relations with each other. But both sides need to agree to it, says Paul. And it should only be for a limited time. Otherwise, you're potentially putting your spouse in danger of being tempted by Satan to engage in sexual immorality, due to a possible lack of self-control. If a person's sexual needs aren't being fulfilled by his or her spouse, then it's easier for Satan to tempt that person to seek sexual fulfillment outside of the marriage, whether through turning to pornography, prostitution, or some other kind of infidelity. If a married person ends up committing adultery, in part because of a lack of sexual fulfillment at home, then that person has undoubtedly committed a great sin. But the husband or wife who didn't seek to fulfill the needs of their spouse might also have some responsibility in terms of the breakdown of that marriage. So a wise couple will be aware that they shouldn't give any opportunity for temptation to arise. And just to be clear here, fulfilling your spouse's needs doesn't necessarily have to mean full-on sex. There are different ways to bring pleasure and happiness to a partner, and couples should, in getting to know each other and in getting to understand each other better, think about a way to bring satisfaction to both parties in a way that is appropriate and beneficial for the relationship as a whole. So those of you who are married, have you been doing that? Have you been seeking to cultivate physical intimacy sufficient for the two of you to be truly one in heart and mind as well as body? Part of being husband and wife is for you to express love to your partner physically. We need to stop thinking of ourselves and to start thinking about how I can make my spouse fulfilled in both body and soul. Now, marriage is a wonderful institution when it works, but it's also quite complicated. It requires you to really know and understand and love your husband or wife. And it's in part because of all the effort that has to go into a successful marriage that Paul's preference is actually that Christians shouldn't get married unless they really have to. In saying that it's good to marry, Paul viewed this as a concession rather than as a command. His preference was for everyone to be like himself, to be unmarried. But Paul recognises that each person has one's own gift from God. Some may have the gift of celibacy. I guess that's a minority of the population overall. But others have the gift of an active sexuality. So Paul's advice to those who are unmarried is for you to stay unmarried and celibate if you can. If you can live a celibate lifestyle, then why get married? But if you find it hard to control yourself, if you find yourself being tempted to fulfill your sexual urges in ways outside of sexual activity with a husband or a wife, then you need to get married. Paul says in verse 9 something that is important for all of us, and in particular for those of you who have relatively recently reached the age of physical maturity. If you're having trouble controlling yourself, you need to find a suitable Christian spouse to settle down with. It's a lot better to marry, says Paul in verse 9, than to burn up with passion. Now, one of the problems that our society has is that the age of marriage is getting later and later. From a Christian point of view, the later you get married, the more chances there are for sexual sin to take place. The way of the world is basically the same. Marriage doesn't really matter. That's something that I'll leave until after I've finished my studies or I've got a job or until after I've travelled the world or bought a house or established my career. I might eventually think about it when I want kids. But even then, it isn't necessary. That's the way of the world in terms of what they think about marriage. But that way of thinking is far removed from what God thinks. If you have a strong sexual drive, the longer you delay marriage, the more difficult you're going to be placing yourself in. If you have a strong sex drive and you delay getting married, you're either going to torture yourself with regret over sexual sin, or say you're a Christian while living like a heathen, or simply give up on Christianity altogether. Sure, marriage isn't something to rush into. But the problem today is that it's being delayed for years, and ultimately for some, never ever entered into. In an age of relative prosperity, which plays a part in causing puberty to arrive earlier, the age of marriage is getting further and further delayed. Do you see a problem there? The average age of marriage in Australia at the moment is approaching 30 for males, and it's right on 28 for females. This means that the gap between puberty and marriage has blown out for many to be 15 years or more. Now, from a Christian point of view, there's nothing necessarily wrong about waiting so long to be married, assuming that that can be 15 years of celibacy. But that's not the case, is it, for the vast majority? These days, according to statistics, around 80% of couples in Australia cohabit before marriage. And who knows how many sexual partners and pornographic images young people have made use of in the meantime, all because they can't control themselves. Not to mention that the longer you delay marriage, the less time there is for having children. And lots of women are encountering that problem. A lot better than burning with lust is finding sexual fulfillment with a husband or wife. That's what marriage, in part, has been designed for. A safe environment for sexual activity and fulfillment. Most of us have been designed for marriage, and it's something that we should be looking out for, not something that we're seeking to avoid for as long as possible. So, by way of conclusion, let's summarise what Paul has been saying here. The first thing is, as you grow up, you need to work out what your gift is in regards to sexuality. Celibate or active? If you have a sexual drive, then I guess we can conclude you don't have the gift of celibacy. And if you don't have the gift of celibacy, then God has created you to be married. Secondly, those who don't have the gift of celibacy, but who aren't yet married, which is probably most of you younger ones here, then you need to assess how well you're going at self-control. If you find yourself turning to porn or being tempted to engage in sexual activity outside of marriage, or if you find yourself having to relieve yourself individually on a regular basis, which isn't ideal, particularly as lustful thoughts are often involved, then you seriously need to start thinking about the advice that God's word is giving to you today. You might bring up a whole lot of excuses to reject this advice, to say, I'm not ready for marriage. But if you're having trouble controlling yourself sexually, but aren't yet married, then just be careful that you don't end up incinerating yourself through uncontrolled sexual desire. The sexual desire that God has created in us needs to be put to good purposes. And finally, those of us who are already married need to work at our marriages. And an important part of that is regular physical intimacy. All in all, if we're smart, we'll realize that one of the fastest ways that Satan can take us down to the eternal flames of the next world is by starting a fire in our hearts in this world over sex. Sex is a powerful God-given gift, but with that power comes the potential for self-destruction. But also the potential, if you use it correctly, for great fulfillment. If you use that gift for the glory of God and also for the benefit of your husband or wife.